Welcome to the DermVet Podcast. I'm Dr. Ashley Bourgeois, a board-certified veterinary dermatologist practicing in Portland, Oregon with animal dermatology clinics. I'm also a mom of two, just trying to find the balance like everyone else. Let's learn to ditch the itch, cytology, everything, and make derm more fun than frustrating. Before we jump into this week's episode of the podcast, I just have to recognize, because I actually forgot to recognize this last week, that this podcast just had its birthday. It was, I think, December 3rd, 4 years ago, right before our world turned upside down, that I started this podcast. And I can't believe it's already been 4 years. I still remember having the microphone, trying to Google like how to start a podcast, having the microphone in my Amazon cart for I think like a couple of months before finally just doing it. One, you know, I had a young baby at the time and just sitting there late at night after I'm kind of dealing with him and just finally pressing buy, because I was like, I just need to figure this out. I've had this dream for so long. And the fact that to fast forward, it's already been 4 years is crazy. Obviously, there's been some ups and downs and twists and turns, just like life brings us. You know, we had a pandemic. Obviously, we have our son who is currently fighting cancer and doing well, but lots of kind of ups and downs of, you know, how many interview episodes I can do, what type of topics we talk about. But in the end, you all have been along for the journey. And I haven't taken the time in a while to look at reviews or just see if there's mention of podcast throughout the internet. And I did last night. And it again was just an amazing reminder of how much the support you all give this podcast means. And truly, you're the one that keeps it going. Whenever I am at conferences and people mention how helpful it is just to be able to get little nuggets of derm knowledge in their busy lives, you know, there's times where there's a lot going on. And I kind of wonder, is this really helping? Am I just saying the same thing over and over again? I have other things I need to work on. But the podcast really has been one of the things I have really wanted to keep going and have loved. So, you know, as we're closing out this year of 2023, I can't wait to see what next year brings. Hopefully, a bit more stability in our lives. But I really want to get back to diving into interviews and having other people on. But again, the only way I have that opportunity to grow this, to continue having people on, is because you listen and you support it and you share it on social media and you leave reviews, and all of that stuff matters. So happy birthday to the podcast, but it's only turned 4 because of your support. So something I wanted to talk about today based on a set of lectures I recently gave were questions about cat history and how cats can just be really difficult, not only with getting them to the veterinarian, the clinical signs they show at home, but sometimes I feel like collecting history can be quite tricky. Derm history can be tricky in general, but cats can be really unique. Right? Because a lot of times they're given injectables. Owners aren't sure what they are because it's hard to give them medications. If they are giving medications, they don't know how much they've given. To know if something's helped can be really tough because the owners really don't see them do a lot of their behaviors. So I want to give some tips of kind of questions to ask and how to ask them, specifically focusing on our feline friends today, and hoping that it can break down that barrier a bit, just to give you some confidence when you are starting to talk to owners. Anytime I talk about collecting history, because the difficult thing about dermatology, there's lots of tricky things about it, but one of the difficult things is how much time needs to be taken to collect things like history. And I know that you all don't necessarily have the time set aside for exams like I do, you know, as a referral hospital in a chronic specialty. I do set a lot more time aside to really talk to owners about what's been happening. Obviously, there's a lot of things that have usually gone on for years and frustration and records I need to go through. And I completely respect that you all may not have that. So one of the big things I always recommend when discussing how important history is if you are able to, putting together some sort of dermatology intake form. So if you have an owner that the pet's developed a new behavior, if you have a owner that the pet's developed a new derm issue, really having a derm intake form they can fill out ahead of time to assure that you can go through that quickly and gain the information you need to. Because we all know it can be really hard with owners because, you know, there's a lot of talking and discussion and stories, which we love, but sometimes they can get distracting or we can kind of go off in little tangents. And so having a derm intake form gets you some pretty important information quickly. And so you can really focus on that info and diving in deeper to the things you feel like are important for that pet. So, you know, instead of being like, is it seasonal or non-seasonal and having to discuss that, if you can initially see they write seasonal, you can say, it seems like it's a seasonal issue. You know, what times of year do you notice it's worse? And that can just be really beneficial. It also, if owners have to fill it out ahead of time, a lot of times they will go through records, pill bottles at home, so they can see what they have tried to give, what was, you know, maybe successful or not successful, what food are they feeding at home instead of the red bag. Maybe they go to the cupboard and actually see what they have. So being able to email that form to them so that they can do it ahead of time when they're not frantic and maybe came to their appointment late and all of a sudden don't take the time to fill it out can be really, really helpful. It also is just going to save you that time and frustration so you really can focus on the things that matter. When you do start collecting a history, I always, you know, again, we try to practice fear-free practices at our clinic. Make sure that when you're collecting history that you recognize that gives the cat time. So we'll open the carrier door to allow the cat to roam around the room if they choose to. If they end up not choosing to roam around the room, then certainly, like, once we're done with the history collection, then we'll move on to removing the lid from the carrier. So this is really important to make sure owners have appropriate carriers that the lid can be removed from, because that's a lot less scary for a cat compared to just pulling them out of the front of their carrier. That if you have an owner that has a bolted down carrier or a zip tied carrier, that can be tricky to do. If their cat is walking around in social, I pet the cat as I'm collecting history. That makes the cat warm up to me. It also allows the owner to see, hey, I care about your cat. Like, I'm here to also have a relationship with your cat, even as I'm talking to you and collecting history. I think that can be really helpful, and we want owners to trust us and bring their cats back. So having that time and that recognition, even if it's just a couple of minutes, can be great. Then it comes down to certain questions that we need to ask. And of course, there's endless questions that can be considered. What are some of the more crucial questions I feel like are important? You know, asking how old when clinical signs started. Sometimes people just focus on what's happening now. If you have a cat who, say, breaks out with pyoderma or overgrooms, they'll just focus on the fact that they've been doing it for the last couple of weeks. But if it's an 8-year-old cat, it's really important for me to know if this cat has historically done that, like they have overgroomed their belly since they were 6 months old. That's really important to know versus this has just started at a middle age to later date in life. It is really, 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 let me just say that again, really, really, really important to know what flea prevention they are on. If they say monthly topical, we have to know which one. If they don't know, try to look in previous records. If they buy it online, try to have them look up, you know, their receipts in their emails. If they really don't know and you can't figure it out, have them email you or call you when they get home. Just learning that a cat is on flea prevention but not knowing which one or if it's consistent is not good enough. We still see a significant amount of flea allergic cats. Yes, I always say, I know it depends on where you are geographically, but where I am and in many areas of the country, I talk to dermatologists, many of us still see flea allergic cats and, you know, we'll see notes of on flea prevention, but we won't know which one. Remember, they're not all created equal. Or when we actually ask the owner if they're applying it, they're not consistent with it. They're not doing it the right way. So we need to know what flea prevention are they using? Are they consistent with it? You know, have they been year round with that prevention? And then also knowing what the other cats or dogs in the household are on. I have had situations where the itchy cat is on a good flea control, but then we find out the other cat at home, since they're not itchy, or the dog at home, Since they're not itchy is not on flea control, and I have had many situations where I've just had them be on consistent flea control, and then over time, the itchy cat does a lot better. So it is important. What flea prevention are they using? Are they consistent with it? Has it been year-round? And then are other pets in the household on flea prevention? Another crucial question, especially if you're thinking of things like ectoparasite, is your cat exposed to the outdoors? And you want to be cautious of how you ask this, because sometimes I think there's this stigma over an outdoor cat, depending on where you are, more urban, suburban area versus rural. And people think if they say like their cat is outdoor, quote unquote, at all, that maybe there's some different feelings about that. So if you just say, is your cat go outdoor, if they're not an outdoor cat 100% of the time, they'll say no. But we know there's things like catios that are out. I've had numerous situations where the cat likes to sun in the backyard deck, you know, for a couple hours a day. All of that matters, and we want to know that. So do they have exposure to the outdoors? Do they ever go on the deck? Do they go, you know, do they have a catio at home? Can be a nice way to ask. Seasonal component, of course. And it's really tricky because there's lots of things. I keep seeing tricky a lot today. It is tricky. Derm is tricky. Because seasonality can be quite, it's not always clear cut. It's great if they just have issues in the summer. But one, we can have cats who have multiple allergies, so they can be year round, but maybe certain seasons do get an uptick because maybe they're food allergic with seasonal allergies to the environment. Or because we do have difficult times and limited options to medicate cats. There's a lot of long-acting steroids that are used. So people think, oh, they did fine in the spring, so it's not really seasonal, but it could be because they got a long-acting steroid injection. So sometimes that is tough. Asking what therapies have worked. Again, it's really important if they have seen previous veterinarians to try to get those records. Because if they just think that cat got an antibiotic injection, but actually antibiotic injection again was given with some steroid, then they may just think antibiotics clear it up when it's actually because they were giving a long-acting steroid injection. Sometimes people also, because by the time they come to see me, I'll say, well, I see you got a steroid injection. Did it help? And they're like, well, yeah, but I don't want to do that again. I'm not necessarily asking to repeat because something worked. I just need to know if it helped. Because if I have a case where even steroids were not effective, maybe there's something else going on besides allergies. I want to know what areas of the body are affected. You know, are they always going for their head and neck? We've talked about other episodes of the podcast where food allergy, if they're good on good ectoparasite flea control, we know food allergic cats, they have a higher percentage likelihood of scratching to their head and neck with food allergies if it truly is allergic. So I want to know if they're always going for their head and neck, if they're overgrooming their belly, if they're chewing their rump. You know, we see a lot of these cats that still chew their rump, lick their belly, and they'll have flea allergy, those pantsless cats that we've talked about in the past. And that's really important for me to know. Versus if they say, oh, their paw pads are always affected, or their nose. That would be weird for allergies to affect that in a cat. So I want to know which areas of the bodies have been affected, what are the newer areas that have been affected in case something else has popped up. The last tidbit I want to give when talking about history with cats specifically, and of course, again, there's so many questions that can be asked, but when you are asking if a cat is itchy, we can't just ask, well, is your cat itchy? Because people just traditionally think about itch being, well, they scratch their areas of their body or maybe chew. But there's so many different ways that cats, especially cats, can show us their itch. So do they groom excessively? That is a hard question for some owners to answer, because cats are groomers. They're supposed to groom. But if they have multiple cats, that can be helpful, because you can say, compared to your other cat, do they groom excessively? You know, or do they seem to groom a lot? And then we can see if they have areas of barbed alopecia on portions of their body. Do they get hairballs? How do cats get hairballs? Because they're over grooming. They're swallowing that hair. So I have had cases of seasonal hairballs in the past. Do they chew? You know, do they chew at their limbs or their paws? That is very abnormal for a cat. We have talked about in the past how psychogenic alopecia is extremely rare in cats and probably overdiagnosed, especially when I've talked to behaviorists in the past. You know, if a cat is to lick because they're trying to soothe themselves from being anxious, usually they're going to methodically lick because they're trying to calm themselves down versus just corn cobbing their limb. That should not be something that's normal. Do they scratch a lot? Do they head shake? Do they really want you to scratch them? Do they have sensitivities? You know, I've had cats that get really itchy if you start scratching their rump and they're really leaning into it. Some of them will actually take like their back leg and do that thumper motion because they're just so stimulated by that itch that's happening on their skin, whether it's infection or their primary allergic disease. And so that is something that we want to recognize. And my last kind of hint with a reviewing history, though we've talked a little bit about this, and I've talked about this in other episodes of the podcast too, is watch out for timing of those injections of steroids. Again, I totally respect that cats are difficult. And if you can just give, you know, one or two long-acting steroid injections a year, there's going to be a lot of cats that do fine with that. I tend to see the ones that are referred because they need them way more often than we feel comfortable with. And I've had situations where it seems like they respond well to steroids. People assume it's seasonal allergies because they'll do well for a couple of months. But then what we'll find out is steroids obviously can do a lot of things. So they also can treat things like autoimmune diseases. And I have had cases of pemphigus where owners come in saying they, you know, have seasonal issues and they go on steroids, it gets better. We'll come to find out it's really that they have an autoimmune disease and steroids obviously can treat that too. So that's where you want to put all of those things together. The history, the areas of the body that are affected, of course, doing things like cytology and looking under the microscope so you can identify things that are abnormal or strange, you know, refer a biopsy in those situations. But some of these are tough. Some of them, you know, we have to take our time through the workup too. Treat infection first, see how they do, see what the owner's able to do, because of course treatment options are a bit more limited in cats, including what they'll actually take. And so they can be tough, but we can definitely figure them out if we take the time. So have owners fill out those forms ahead of time, get comfortable with history, you know, get comfortable having your technicians, your assistants, you know, collect some of this information for you if you need. We really can be successful with these cats, and a large portion of that is starting by getting the right history.